The following podcast contains spoilers and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Criminal Adaptations, the show where we take a look at some of your favorite movies and the true crime stories that inspired them. I'm Ashley. I'm a clinical psychologist and forensic evaluator in the state of Oregon.
And I'm Remy. I spent over a decade working in the film and television industry in Los Angeles, California.
And welcome back, everybody. We are here for part two of our bonus episodes about the show Feud, Capote vs. the Swans. We have a lot to cover today. We're going to be doing episodes 4 through 8. But before we get to that, Remy, how are you doing?
I'm doing swell, Ashley, and doing a little bit better because we got a little notification on Instagram today. Ashley, do you want to fill us in? I think you were jumping up and down when you heard about this.
Yes, I was very excited. Today, our Molly's Game episode posted, and I checked the Instagram account and had a DM and a reshare of the story from the star of our Molly's Game episode, Molly Bloom herself. She reshared our story and took time out of her day to reach out with a funny little comment, and that is just so exciting.
It was very cool. I agree. She is the first true crime person, I guess, to reach out to us in any way. So this is a milestone. Thank you very much, Molly, or should I say friend of the show, Molly Bloom. And if you are listening, we appreciate it. And that was very cool of you.
Very exciting start to the day. That's for sure.
And before we jump back in, we are picking back up with episode 4. So if you haven't listened to the last episode, we highly recommend that you go back and listen to it before this one. Or maybe you saw those first 3 episodes and didn't see the last 4 and just want to hear us talk about them instead. You can do that too. You're free to do as you wish. But we would recommend you getting the full story by listening to last week's episode. So Ashley, should we jump in with episode 4, It's Impossible?
Yes, what is the IMDb synopsis?
Babe makes peace with a harsh reality. Truman makes an effort to get sober. Just 2 sentences, really right to the point there. And it opens with Babe playing a record with the song The Impossible, which is also the name of the episode, and I will insert a little clip of that here.
It's impossible. Tell the sun to leave the sky, it's just impossible.
Yes, later Babe says this is one of her favorite songs, or I guess Bill says that to her. But Babe is getting all done up for the day to have a cancer scan. And the scan shows that there is no reduction in the tumors. She is trying very hard to keep everything together and ends with asking the doctor how much time she has left.
Yeah, and I did not know what she was dying of. I did not know what kind of cancer until this episode, but I guess it was several cancerous tumors in and around her spine, something along those lines.
She actually had lung cancer.
Oh, so what was the spinal thing the doctor was doing?
I assume because she was laying on her back, so the scans were going through to her lungs. I thought it was some spine stuff too, but it would make sense that how she was laying, I guess it was going through her. But it was lung cancer, and in a later episode, there's a scene when Bill is chastising her for smoking, which makes a lot of sense.
I remember at first I think I thought they were going to do a spinal tap on her or something like that. I don't know hardly anything about spinal taps or what they're medically used for, so please don't lecture me too much on that one. But the next scene, we are with CZ and Slim, who are, surprise, out to lunch together. Everybody loves lunch in this show. It is an important meal.
CZ tells Slim that Truman is planning on having another black and white ball, this time with very famous guests, including The Who and Fidel Castro.
And around this time, CZ is the only one of the Swans who is currently talking to Truman. And Truman will invite all the Swans to his ball again.
Slim is really not down to attend this ball, but Babe says she might consider going.
Babe realizes during this lunch that Slim has sort of been behind the whole Truman exile thing, and Babe is actually really interested in going to the ball. Her life is not long for this world, and she's like, life is too short, so she wants to go to the ball, and I don't blame her.
This is also the first time that Babe reveals to the other Swans that she has cancer.
At Truman's apartment, John is there, our good old buddy John, the complete asshole. They are discussing the guest list to Truman's upcoming ball, and Truman apparently hasn't had a drink in almost a week. But unfortunately, John has been having sex with a woman behind Truman's back, and John wants to invite this woman to Truman's party, which is a bold ask, if I were to say so.
Truman is not happy with this guest list, starts chastising John, who then slaps him and starts insulting him. And my note here is, God, this relationship is toxic.
Just for reference, the woman's name is Catherine Kuderman. Just a really great name that I felt like I needed to write down.
We then learn that Slim is actually having an affair with Bill behind Babe's back. This is something that there's no evidence that actually happened, but she mentions to Bill that she's thinking about suing Truman for defamation based on his portrayal of her in his chapter.
Slim also seems very sure that none of the Swans will be going to the party, or at least she's going to try her best to prevent any of the Swans from attending. And this is one of the points where I start to realize that Slim might just be wicked in some way. Not like wicked awesome, like Wicked Witch type stuff. Preventing a dying woman from reconnecting with her friend over petty stuff? Come on.
Truman is having dinner by himself and is again off the wagon. Slim is waiting outside when Truman comes out of the bathroom and starts throwing insults at him. He again mentions that he misses Babe, and she takes the opportunity to let him know that she is suing him for defamation. Slim is cold as ice.
Truman really wants to make up with Babe. That is the underlining theme of basically all of the next few episodes, is Babe and Truman really wanting to reconnect with one another, and just the little reasons why they don't end up happening.
Truman sits back down at his table, and this time Jack is there waiting for him, who reveals that he spoke to a neurologist from a hospital who let him know that Truman's brain is actually shrinking from all the booze he is drinking. He begs Truman to go to rehab because he just can't stand sitting around watching him kill himself.
And Jack wants to take him to rehab, like, immediately. He wants to take him right then and there. Don't even finish your meal. We gotta go. And if you're not coming, Jack says he's done with Truman. He's tired of watching Truman kill himself, and he's not gonna stand by any longer.
He also takes off Truman's sunglasses, and we see that Truman has a black eye, probably from his fight with John in the previous scene. After much convincing and an ultimatum, Truman relents and agrees to Jack's conditions.
Okay, side question here that I've been wondering from the beginning. Where is Harper Lee? Where is she? She was Truman's BFF in the In Cold Blood days, and she is nowhere to be seen in any of this. Where is Harper?
I'm kind of surprised that Ryan Murphy didn't throw in something having to do with Harper Lee, some sort of quote, him mentioning her. The only thing I can think of is that she wasn't part of this, like, New York society crew. Harper Lee was someone he knew from his childhood, from Alabama. She was there with him in In Cold Blood, but I don't think she lived in New York. And she certainly didn't frequent this social circle.
Ryan Murphy did take a few creative liberties with the story, of course, and I'm surprised he didn't take one with having Harper pop up in at least one episode or a scene, because in all the other depictions I have seen, it really highlights that Truman and Harper were very, very close, but maybe they had fallen out of touch around this time?
Well, while Truman is at rehab, he is visited by CZ and Joanne. And being in rehab does not, how do I say this, stop his love for gossip.
Yes, Joanne Carson, Johnny Carson's wife or possibly ex-wife by this time, I'm not sure.
They got divorced in 1972. They were married for about 9 years, so I think at this timeline, they have already been divorced. But Joanne Carson, before she married Johnny Carson, she herself was a model. She was also a stewardess for Pan Am Airlines in the 1950s and once helped calm Howard Hughes during a flight.
That's nice of him. And with the later episodes, I guess she must be a calming figure to troubled men in that regard. But we'll talk about that more later, of course.
And even though she became good friends with Truman after they met at a dinner party in 1966, as he was a frequent guest on Johnny Carson's The Tonight Show, she never lived in New York. She stayed in Hollywood, LA, because she hated the social world and class conscientiousness of New York, but still bonded with Capote as she saw him as a wounded child and identified with him based on her own traumatic childhood.
Truman seems to stay with Joanne whenever he goes to the West Coast or he's in LA filming something. He'll crash at her place for a couple days.
Yeah, she loved him, even though she actually was a character in the book. Her name was Jane Baxter, and her character in Answered Prayers was loosely based on her marriage to Johnny and his affairs, and it was very recognizable to everyone who it was. But she didn't let the portrayal impact their friendship because she desired his friendship so much, and sounds like she might have been a little insecure, but she stuck with him until the very end. He actually had two bedrooms at her house, one for sleeping and one for writing.
Well, that's very hospitable of her. But back in rehab with Truman, CZ, and Joanne, Truman reveals that they have him on some sort of pill that makes him sick if he tries to drink, which I am not sure what that pill is. Are you familiar with this at all?
Yeah, it's antabuse. Basically, if you take it and drink on it, you get like violently ill. So it's effective from deterring people from drinking on it. The thing is, if you don't take the pill and drink, then you don't have those side effects. So you have to like really, really, really want to be sober. Otherwise, you can just stop taking the pill and drink.
So Truman begins showing the ladies around the rehab by gossiping about the other patients and even talking about how he had sex with one of them. Truman shows them the arts and crafts room, and he also shows them that they are not allowed magazines at this rehab, but Truman still sneaks them in anyway. So Truman is kind of doing a lot of shady, behind-the-scenes, not-following-the-rules stuff at this rehab, which I would say is a sign of his less than 100% commitment to this.
CZ actually looks down at one of the magazines Truman has and sees that there is an article in there written at the request of Slim saying that Truman is planning the pity party of the century. This upsets CZ, and she actually asks Slim to stop talking smack about him, stop getting these articles written because he's trying to get sober.
When Truman finally gets out of rehab, Jack takes him home, and Jack calls Truman the most important person in the world to him, and encourages Truman to finish his book. Everyone keeps telling Truman, just finish the book already. You keep putting it off. You need to finish this book. And Truman is making up any and every excuse possible to not do so.
I think this scene is a good depiction of what their relationship was like. Even though Truman is putting Jack through the ringer, Jack loves Truman. He is his world. He's his everything, and he just can't leave him, especially now when he has so few friends left.
One of the hardest things about love can be you cannot control who you fall in love with. And I think Jack knows that better than a lot of people. He loves Truman dearly, but is watching this man destroy himself. And if he stays with him, he'll destroy him with him.
Back at another lunch, this time it is just Lee and Slim. And surprisingly, Lee also asks Slim to stop attacking Truman because of his alcoholism. She also mentions that she knows that Slim is having sex with Bill and does not seem to approve.
Yeah, Lee wants all of this to stop. Lee is one of my favorite swans, if not my favorite swan, because she is definitely no BS. She is going to tell you how she feels, and usually she is pretty dead on with reading the room and the situation.
I also want to take this to point out that this is probably the best Calista Flockhart has ever looked. She looks slamming in all these episodes. She's stunning.
I had a thought during this scene, and hear me out here. All right. So I think Calista Flockhart may be basing her performance on old grumpy Harrison Ford, which is her husband. I just noticed certain tones, certain looks, just certain things she's been doing through a few episodes that I swear I've seen Harrison Ford do in media interviews where he just does not want to be there at all, and he is not afraid to tell you if something is bullshit or not. So that's just my theory. I'm not basing that on anything, but there were similarities between Calista and her husband in this show, I think.
I could see that. I was listening to a podcast on my way home and someone told a random story about meeting Harrison Ford, and it was definitely a grumpy old man, and he said it in a little voice like, oh, it's not like this documentary is flying off the shelf, kid. So he definitely comes across as a grumpy old man, but they're so cute and they've been together forever.
They have been together forever. I think they've been together since the Ally McBeal days. It's pretty crazy. It's a really successful Hollywood marriage, and props to them. It's hard out there.
So even though Slim is sure that Babe does not know about her affair with Bill, Babe reveals that she does. She actually gives Bill permission to be with Slim after she's gone, to Bill's surprise. Side note here, and this is kind of cute, Bill never remarried after Babe died.
I did not realize that. I figured he would have. And during this scene, there's also a very beautiful moment where Bill puts on the Impossible song that we had discussed and played for you earlier. He and Babe slow dance together while Bill sings the lyrics of the song to her. It's very, very sweet.
This is one of the scenes where it's like Bill is redeemable, because throughout the rest of the episodes while Babe is alive, they have a lot of fights and arguments. And then you have scenes like this where he's putting on her favorite song and dancing with her when he's at every single cancer treatment, trying to hold it together and just sobbing and breaking down because he knows she's going to die.
There is a phone call later that I feel perfectly demonstrates how much Bill cares about Babe and also what a terrible husband he is in the same span of a few seconds. But we will get to that later.
Jack, probably feeling hopeful about how his relationship with Truman has improved, arrives at Truman's house. He's kind of walking around the house, talking, and realizes, hey, where is Truman? Well, Truman, of course, is in bed, clearly wasted with John.
Yeah, Truman got wasted and decided to call up his abusive ex, John. And this destroys Jack. He's had it at this point. You can tell by his expression. And Jack leaves right away. He goes to Switzerland, as far away as you possibly can from Truman.
Switzerland was a place that Jack really enjoyed going. It sounds like that's kind of where he went to get away to focus on his own writing.
Bill talks to Slim and tells her that Babe knows about the affair and she is happy for them, but they both agree that the relationship has to end right now.
While Truman is on the phone talking to CZ about the guest list for his new party, John's daughter shows up to the apartment. She says she wants nothing to do with John, that she instead wants to learn from Truman and ask him for help getting a job because she needs money. Truman suggests that she should model and stay with him while she does so and take notes on everything he does.
Her name is Carrie, but her modeling name is changed to Kate. So we will refer to her as Kate for the rest of the time.
And this is true. She did change her name to Kate Harrington after she started modeling. And also the stuff about her saying to Truman that she's grateful to him for taking her dad away from the family because he was an angry drunk was likely taken from an interview she did, which was featured in, I think it was a 2019 documentary called The Capote Tapes, which we have not yet watched.
And this is all juxtaposed with Babe discussing the end of her life with her therapist. And it's sort of like Kate's life with Truman is just beginning. And unfortunately, Babe's life is quickly going to come to an end.
We have a little scene where Truman is shopping with John's daughter and he sees Babe and goes to talk to her. She says she's excited for his party, which he says that he is actually canceling.
The two are happy to see each other. I actually am even getting chills just thinking about it. They have really built up how much these two wanted to reconnect. And this is the only scene where they do so. And as you've told me, this is not factual. This did not happen.
No, I think because Babe is recounting to her therapist at the same time, it looks like Truman is talking to some therapist while this scene is being depicted. So I kind of took it as like this could have been what would have happened if they would have reconnected, but they unfortunately never did.
Yes, they hug and they part ways on good terms, and Babe blows Truman a final kiss goodbye, which brings us to episode 5, The Secret Inner Lives of Swans. In November 1975, the day after the Esquire article is published, Truman receives an inspiring visit from a fellow writer. And I want to say up front that this started off as my least favorite episode, and by the end, it was one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, I would say this episode and also the finale were two of my least favorite, but the twist in this one was fucking wild, to say the least.
The twist is American Horror Story-esque. It is fucking nuts, and there's no way it's true, but it is really, really cool. And there's something in it that I think I picked up on that you may not have. Anyway, Babe is reading the Esquire article, and this is when she had first read the Esquire article, I believe. Bill and Babe get into a big fight. Bill is upset about Truman, and Babe is upset about Happy, the girl that Bill was sleeping with behind his wife's back.
That anger is expressed when Truman calls to talk to Babe. Bill answers, says to never call again, that he might as well move to Patagonia for how isolated he is to become, and wishes him to die.
He tells him point blank, go die. He is furious at Truman, something that continues for the remainder of their years. Bill never, ever, ever forgives Truman, as far as I know.
Truman hangs up the phone and takes several handfuls of pills, essentially until he blacks out.
Yeah, I would assume this was some sort of a suicide attempt because he was just taking fistfuls of pills.
And when he wakes up, he has a breakfast of champions. That is a blend of liquor and ice. That is it. And answers the ringing phone.
There's someone on the other end. We don't know who it is yet. And the person is very well spoken, whoever it is.
So well spoken. I was thinking, like, did people talk like this? It is, like, poetic. But when you find out who it is, it makes sense.
Truman admits to the man on the phone that he may have tried to kill himself the other night, and Truman knows what the swans are going to do to him now because of the article.
Truman agrees to meet the caller at his usual restaurant, and there we see a black man who is revealed to be James Baldwin, the famous author who wrote Go Tell It on the Mountain, among others.
I have not read that, and I was not very familiar with James Baldwin, but he was a homosexual black man and a very accomplished, well-spoken, well-dressed author from how he is portrayed on the show, and he's very interesting. I'm actually going to check out a little bit more about him after we've wrapped all this up.
James reveals that he knows that Truman needs someone to turn to because he knows that, you know, there isn't a lot of homosexual writers, and he decides to take it upon himself to spend the day with Truman. He also says that he wants to know everything that Truman left out of the book, as he suspects there's lots of juicy gossip that didn't make it in, and that kind of sets the stage for the whole rest of the episode.
James also orders them some cocotas, which is a type of cod, and I just like the name, so I'm sharing it with you. Try it at your next restaurant, cocotas. It looks very delicious.
The rest of the episode is intertwined with clips of what James and Truman do for the day, along with Truman telling him gossip about all the swans and that kind of being portrayed in front of us as he's telling the story of the things he could have written in the chapter and didn't.
At some point, it is revealed, I think by Truman, that Truman and James actually don't know each other very well at all, which I also found very interesting for James to show up and spend all this time trying to reinvigorate Truman's spirit.
So I actually looked it up and the two knew of each other, but there's no evidence that they spent time together at all.
So James and Truman walk around talking about the swans. Truman and James dish about all of the swans' sexual flings, except for CZ, who used to do that stuff, a la the painting we mentioned in the previous episode, but is kind of a prude and not really a very sexual person these days.
This is when Truman said that he wasn't trying to go after the women. He was trying to go after the men for their affairs. And it's kind of hypocritical that they got all upset because all of them also have lots and lots of affairs, often with younger men.
Truman mentions a bunch of offhanded things about the swans to James, including that they are all subtly racist. And of course, James is a black man and takes offense to this. But Truman does describe them as almost not being aware of their racism because there is like a hierarchy in rich society that he talks a bit about where certain ethnicities are on the bottom of the rung, according to Truman, where they are servers and of that nature. The entertainers for the rich people are homosexuals, and there were a couple of like hangers-ons or next level up, but it was just how the rich people were using basically everyone underneath them for their own means.
Yeah, he says the swans' bigotry is unconscious and so ingrained in their culture. Truman also takes a minute to excuse himself to call Babe. He tells her that being at restaurants isn't the same without her and that he never meant to hurt her, but he did not apologize for what he wrote.
Next, James and Truman are off looking at some modern art and continuing their conversation. James asks if the swans care about art, and Truman says that the swans just like to collect things and they don't really care about the things that they are collecting. Truman also says that the swans' lives are interesting, but the swans themselves are not. And there is no humility or empathy or compassion whatsoever with how Truman is describing the swans during these scenes.
Which is funny because that's the traits he says his swans are lacking.
Truman also goes on to say that the swans are terrible mothers, which I think some of the swans would actually agree if you were to ask them directly.
The clip that is portrayed to show this is tough to watch. It's Babe at her daughter's birthday party. She is hammered. She tells her daughter that everyone needs to leave because she's tired. She then stumbles out of her seat into the bathtub and collapses into the tub as the shower is running and just starts sobbing.
Around this time, I wrote the note that this is my least favorite episode so far, because I was just not digging these gossipy stories and how they were being portrayed, and just the whole episode seemed kind of weird to me, but that makes sense in just a little bit.
Baldwin then tries to encourage Truman to get sober because he's been incoherent in his TV interviews lately. He dismisses Truman's excuse that he drinks because of his pain, and Truman adds that he also drinks because he's afraid of abandonment and acceptance. He's scared of life with the swans and life without the swans because both are unbearable to him.
After a bit of encouragement, Truman does convince James to go out for some drinks after the art museum.
Two drinks only, though.
Truman is in a much better mood at this point. It seems like James has really picked up Truman's spirit throughout the episode. And it is a weird bar that they go to. There's a guy in tighty whities in a cage, just sort of dancing, but not really. He's just kind of swaying back and forth unenthusiastically. He's not really into it, but I don't know. It's a weird place.
Truman also reveals that he doesn't really understand why they're so mad at him for what he wrote about Anne Woodward, because they weren't kind to her either. And this is shown over a clip of Slim and Babe completely icing out Anne at lunch.
Truman says that all of the Swans always hated Anne, and from what you have told me, Anne was never really on great terms with Truman in real life.
I bet that this is kind of like a little mention to the Swans hated Anne because she was not from their same cut of class. She married into this wealth. She didn't come from it.
Oh, she was not born into it, so they were not going to accept her because she married into the life instead of being naturally born into it. How very royal of them.
He also takes the time to throw out there that the Swans live on air and water, and that they barely eat, and Lee even spits out her food into a napkin at one of the lunches.
I did notice that the Swans do order food, but I never really see them eat in any of the episodes. But that could also be a production thing because actors don't like having to eat food over and over and over again during takes.
It's like The Bachelor. They always have all this food sitting there and they never eat it.
I'll have to take your word for it on that one.
After the two drinks, James says, "All right, let's go." And they make their way to Truman's apartment.
For a nightcap, because Truman convinces James that he can have just one more. And around this time, I started to realize that the actor portraying James reminded me a lot of Sidney Poitier. I don't think you're familiar with him, actually, but he is an older actor who had a very strong, commanding, intelligent voice and presence.
And this is kind of a subtle thing. At first, Truman agrees to just drink juice when he gets back to the apartment. And James seems to believe that that's what he's going to do. But then when Truman is in the kitchen, you hear the distinctive sound of a cork being pulled. And that's when James just loses it. When Truman comes back, he slaps the glass out of his hand.
He not only slaps it, he slaps it against the wall, shattering it and spraying juice everywhere. It is a very dramatic, get that out of your hand this instant, young man, type response.
Well, and he says this because he explains that he's really, it seems, offended that Truman is drinking his talent away because he has so much more that he needs to say and that needs to be read.
Yeah, he gives Truman a speech that sounds like it was written by a Harvard English professor. Lots of big words, metaphors. It is very dramatic. And it basically comes down to Truman has more work to do, damn it, and he needs to finish his novel. Before James leaves, he gives Truman a kiss, but not in a sexual way, more of a wake-up call type kiss. Like, get your shit together, man.
Truman then climbs into bed wearing some really comfy striped jammies, and James gives him a call, seemingly to check on him and say he's going back to Paris. He also says he has one final swan lore to tell Truman. We left this out, but throughout this whole episode, James is telling Truman these little swan facts that he apparently looked up at the library before he went to visit Truman.
Actual swans, not the women. Real, literal swans.
And this one is probably the most interesting of them all. According to James, the Queen of England actually owns all the swans in the country, and royals used to eat them so often that they almost went extinct. And now, if one wanted to eat a swan in England, the Queen is the only person in the whole country that would be able to do so because she owns them all.
The Queen of England is the only person in England who can legally eat a swan. That is your fun fact that you probably didn't know for today. James is also insinuating that Truman is the Queen in this scenario, I believe.
The next morning, Truman wakes up revived. He drinks a cup of coffee instead of his usual liquor on the rocks and gets to writing.
You're missing one key aspect here, which was the giveaway for me of the twist here. Truman wakes up on the floor. He doesn't wake up in bed in his comfy pajamas. He wakes up in the outfit on the floor where he had taken the pills previously. So, in my deduction here, all of what has happened with James was something that was concocted in his head, dreamt up during this suicide attempt, because I think it is established he was out for like 3 days, something like that.
Oh, is that it? Yeah, I missed that. But that makes sense because from what I've read, these two probably never even really met. So it makes sense that this was based on a dream. I noticed he was wearing a different outfit, but I was like, whatever.
It was the same outfit. So I believe it was connecting it together. Truman took the pills. He had this elaborate, strange dream where he met James and woke up on the floor. I don't know if he believes it's real, but he does wake up reinvigorated and ready to continue writing his book.
Oh, I see here. On my next note, I have that Jack is on the phone with him and Truman says he's been writing for 3 days about the swans, which I guess maybe he was sleeping or passed out or just kind of in a daze for 3 days, but he definitely has not spent that 3 days writing.
And now for the crazy part. That night, Truman hires himself a personal chef and listens to some opera. And he has no one to eat with, he's just eating alone, so he makes some casual conversation with the chef during dinner. And we slowly begin to realize what Truman is eating, because the chef has all these injuries and he's talking about how hard it was to get this thing for Truman to eat this late at night and how it put up a struggle. And yes, Truman has hired the chef in the middle of the night to go out and kill a swan and cook it for him.
Not only that, he asked the chef to recount everything about how this guy caught this swan, snapped its neck in order to make it for his dinner.
He just sits there eating his swan, enjoying every second of it. And I'm just freaking out at this point. I did not see this part coming at all. And I was like, what the fuck? This is nuts. This definitely isn't true. But damn it, it is really, really good television. And I went from completely hating this episode to loving it in the last 5 minutes or so. And the episode ends with Truman giving the chef an extra tip for all the scratches he got while nabbing the swan. The next episode is Hats, Gloves, and Effete Homosexuals, and we had never heard the word effete before this episode.
I had to Google it, and it means decadent and self-indulgent.
Okay, and the description for this episode is, in New York, it's the end of an era. In California, Truman tries to usher in a new era with a hunky beau.
We open in 1978 with Truman and CZ going to a hat shop. This is apparently a hat shop that CZ loves, but sadly, the owner tells her that he is going out of business because no one wears hats anymore.
Truman and CZ are very disappointed that their favorite hat shop is going out of business. Remember the days when people had favorite hat shops, Ashley?
I don't, before my time.
I don't remember that either. But it seems like it would be cool to go to a hat shop and be a recurring customer. Could you imagine just constantly going to a hat shop and picking up new hats and bonnets and berets and what have you to wear about town?
I cannot, but CZ orders every single one of the last ones he has in the style she wants. I think she ends up buying like 11 hats in like the exact same style because she loves it so.
And Truman buys himself a fancy white hat, which I believe we've seen the real Truman Capote wearing in some photographs.
I think so too. After asking how Babe is doing, he mentions that he wants to go to Tiffany's to get a present for Kate, who's in her last year of modeling school.
Then we come to Truman with Kate at a hair salon, and Truman is giving the stylist advice on how to do Kate's hair, and he's really recommending that she gets an older style haircut, more of the 50s, 60s look, and not something that people would be wearing in the late 70s.
He is making her to look just like his swans, Babe in particular.
Kate knows this is happening. She comments on it, says her look is a bit matronly, and while they're there, Truman starts drinking some champagne. Of course, Kate doesn't want him to drink. No one wants Truman to drink at this point, but Truman claims that champagne isn't drinking because it's good for the stomach.
After getting her hair done, Truman takes Kate to La Côte Basque, which is the place they all go to lunch and is actually the name of the chapter that all this drama was based on. And all eyes are on her as she walks through this restaurant.
Kate and Truman have a seat, and Kate doesn't like the new look that Truman has picked for her because it is very older. It is very dated. You know, Truman's getting older. His swans are getting older. And I don't think that they have been growing with the times.
Slim and Lee are at a nearby table eating, gossiping about Kate and Lee's new flame. When Truman sees them, he greets them excitedly. Slim keeps on a walkin', but Lee decides to bash Kate's hair and does not seem as excited to see Truman as he is to see her.
Yeah, Lee knows how to cut right to the core of someone's insecurities. She points out Kate's dated look immediately, and Truman says that they should do lunch sometime, and Lee says, yeah, we'll do that, but in a way that you're like, no, I'm never going to see you again if it's my choice.
At a photo shoot, the photographer agrees that Kate is dressed and styled way too old for her age and just encourages Truman to move on from the swans already.
So the stylist gets some hair and wardrobe and makeup people to give Kate a much more modern style, and she looks good. I think the more modern look suits Kate more than the old swan look.
Yeah, he like takes her hair down and she just has this like beautiful, wavy, long, luscious locks. She looks great. The next scene, we have Truman and Cece dancing at Studio 54 to a really catchy song. Last night a DJ saved my life. Yeah.
Last night a DJ saved my life. Last night a DJ saved my life from a broken heart. Last night a DJ saved my life.
And I am getting seizures while we watch this because it has flashing lights and it's really bright. Truman is trying to feel young in this scene, and Cece is with him, but she's not really into this whole thing. They're disco dancing out with the youth, out with the kids. Truman really wants to fit in, but yeah, he stands out like a sore thumb, and so does Cece.
Well, and her discomfort grows the next morning when a picture of them dancing at the club is plastered all over the paper. While Truman is unfazed, Cece says their time has passed. They are part of the era of the twist, not of disco. She also, like everyone else in his life, strongly encourages him to finish his book already.
Yeah, Cece says they're too old to be photographed out disco dancing. I think you can go out dancing no matter what your age, but be prepared to maybe get some looks at certain places.
Kate walks into Truman's apartment and tells him that he is 2 months late from paying his tab at the restaurant. This is like the days when regulars would like go to bars and restaurants and say, oh, just put it on my tab.
I've never been alive in any era where people did that. That seems like something you could only do with people that were really regulars at your establishment. But even then, he owed a lot of money to this restaurant.
She also tells Truman to stop drinking, to which he says he has to because he's going to be on TV later and he gets nervous. And he's found a sweet spot, which is around 3.5 drinks when he really starts to sing.
He also hasn't written anything, of course. He actually snaps and yells at Kate for questioning him, and Kate begins to cry, and Truman apologizes to her right away.
Yeah, he immediately seems bad, takes a softer tone, and comforts her, while, unfortunately, Kate starts to compare him to John.
Yeah, Kate says Truman is just like her father, and Truman says that she's right. Next, the swans are out at the restaurant talking about men and divorce. They also bring up Truman's disastrous talk show appearance, which apparently had already happened. A lot of this show is not in chronological order. It kind of jumps around. And there was something specific he said during the interview about Gore Vidal. And Gore Vidal is suing Truman, and Truman is apparently in rehab. So the talk show interview did not go very well from the sound of it.
Yes, Gore Vidal ends up suing him for libel, and soon we will find out why. We are not really sure yet, but CZ tells Lee that she needs to testify on Truman's behalf because she apparently told him the story that Truman said on air, and she is the only one that can save his reputation. We then learn that the story involved Gore Vidal manhandling Jackie Kennedy at the White House. Later, it's revealed that he kind of like forcefully grabbed her shoulder as he was getting kicked out. And Truman says he heard this story from Lee, which is what he tells on air. Well, when CZ tells this, Lee feigns ignorance. She says she never knew anything about this story. And even if she did, she doesn't want to be involved anyway. And she says the reason why she doesn't want to get involved, and I'm not going to repeat it here, because it is another very offensive homophobic slur.
After the meal, the other swans discuss Lee's homophobic slur, and they all disapprove of it. They don't think that there's any room for homophobia within the swans.
CZ is like extremely offended, and good for her for saying that that's not okay. It would have been nicer if she would have said that to Lee's face, but at least she's saying something.
I think it's hard to stand up to Lee from what I have seen in these shows.
Especially because she's like loosely related to the Kennedy family, and we all know they were the closest we've gotten to the royal family.
During their conversation, we also learn that Babe has been bruising from her cancer treatments, so has resorted to covering her entire body at all times, including gloves, which she says she's going to try to bring back in fashion.
They go to the mall and realize the glove department is gone. Much like the hat store, the glove department is closed, again signaling the changing of times.
And again, it blows my mind that there was an entire department devoted to gloves back in the day. I mean, I guess everyone gets cold hands and you want to be fashionable, but yeah, gloves are not a thing anymore.
Truman is in Palm Springs, and on the phone, he says he's there because it's the perfect place for him to dry out and write. But what is Truman doing?
Truman is laying by the pool, drinking vodka, eating a candy cane.
And it's funny because he tells Kate that he's just writing. And when he goes to take a sip of his glass, he like holds the phone away from his ear so Kate can't hear the ice clinking.
He's getting sneakier, little Truman is. This is a weird little story that unfolds from this point forward. A handyman arrives to fix Truman's garbage disposal because Truman is not handy at fixing anything. And Truman talks with the handyman while he fixes the sink. And after the handyman has repaired the garbage disposal, Truman offers him a blowjob as a thank you. And the handyman agrees.
The handyman reveals that this is his first sexual encounter with a man. Truman asks him if he's ever been to Europe, and the handyman says, yeah, once, to Korea. To which Truman replies that handyman should never change. Handyman is so sweet. And I don't know this guy's real name, but he did have a fling with this handyman. I think it was someone that came to repair. Maybe it was the garbage disposal. Maybe it was the air conditioner, because that's handyman's, in this show, his expertise. But this is true. He did meet this guy and brings him back to New York with him.
You're kidding me. I never would have thought that this was a real thing. This handyman actually exists. We literally just refer to him as handyman in our notes.
He actually exists. I think he was before John, though.
That is crazy. I also found it interesting of just how this handyman who had never been with a man, he agreed to Truman without any hesitation. I thought there was going to be an altercation of some sort, but yeah, handyman is into Truman. And by all accounts, we learn later, he has a fiance. So this is his only homosexual fling, is just randomly with Truman Capote.
Handyman says he's got to take off. He has a job in another city. And Truman says, all right, well, I'm coming with you. As the two are riding on Handyman's bicycle, Kiss You All Over by Exile is playing. Over again. I want to kiss you all over. Till the night closes in. Till the night closes in. Schumann mentions he's never heard this song, and Handyman says it's the biggest hit out there.
We then cut to Handyman fixing a toilet while Truman sits nearby in the bathtub, spouting silly, gossipy stories, per usual.
And Handyman loves it. He says Truman is so funny, and probably because Truman is enjoying this positive attention he's getting. He's been getting nothing but kind of negative feedback from everyone in his life thus far. Invites Handyman with him to New York on Monday, because Handyman is too charming and big for Palm Springs.
And the Handyman goes with Truman to New York, and we cut to Truman and the Handyman out to dinner with Jack, Kate, and Cece. And Handyman is just talking air conditioning, mostly. He really, really loves air conditioning, Handyman does.
It's all he talks about. And unlike John in the lunch scene that we've seen before, while Handyman is clearly out of place, he's just so sweet and nice, and he just seems to be having a great time with them.
Handyman's enjoying the ride. He's just happy to be there.
Jack also encourages Truman to apologize to Gore Vidal for what he said on air to avoid this lawsuit, but Truman insists that Lee will testify on his behalf.
That night, Truman and the Handyman are in bed, and Truman is drunk and horny, but Handyman is tired and just wants to watch TV. It's hard doing this socialite, rich person life that Truman lives.
Not only does he not just want to watch TV, he just wants to watch Love Boat.
Because Andy Warhol is the special guest on Love Boat, whom Truman apparently knows, and that doesn't seem surprising. It seems like they would have met each other.
Truman is then meeting with his lawyer, who is telling him that Gore has a good basis for a defamation lawsuit, and that Lee hasn't been returning his calls.
The attorney wants to draft an apology letter, and Truman does not want to do that. Truman calls Cece and asks her about Lee and the whole Gore Vidal situation and if Lee will help Truman out or not. And Cece tells Truman that Lee is not going to help him. And she also tells him about the homosexual slur that Lee had done during their last meal.
After this, the attorney again urges Truman to apologize and to also finish answered prayers because he can't keep defending him to Random House. So that's kind of a nod to how Truman kept getting these extensions from Random House because he was very delayed on this book.
There's another brief scene with Jack and Truman walking through the park in New York, and they pass an Alice in Wonderland statue, which I have been to many times in my childhood. It was very cool to see that. But Jack is on his way back to Switzerland.
It's again another touching moment between the two. Even with all this shit that's going on, the looks that Jack gives Truman, like, convey nothing but true care.
That night, we see Cece watching Truman's interview, the disastrous drunken one, which we had been discussing earlier, and Cece is almost breaking down in tears. Her eyes are watering. She is heartbroken to see what is happening to her friend, and it is very moving. Cece is very worried about Truman.
This was probably one of my favorite scenes with Chloe Sevigny. She nailed it. She's just looking and just conveying so much sadness throughout this whole clip until the very end when she just breaks down and sobs. Truman then is with his plastic surgeon talking about procedures for a neck and facelift. As we know, Truman did develop a little addiction not only to pills and alcohol, but also to plastic surgery. He mentions that he's worried about the pain and asks if there's anything the doctor can do to help him.
At this point, Truman reveals that he has a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas style briefcase full of pills. Like, every pill you have ever heard of is in this briefcase that Truman has,
including an unnamed one that apparently wasn't even legal in the U.S.
Truman goes back home after his consultation, and the Handyman is there, but the Handyman says he can't be Truman's boyfriend anymore because he misses his fiance, and this is the first Truman has heard about the fiance. So this guy, let me just get this straight.
It's not the first time he heard. He mentioned it when they first met, but he kind of made it seem that they were broken up.
Okay. It did sound like they were broken up in that first scene. It sounded like it had ended from how he described it. That's the impression I had.
So maybe it was ended, maybe it wasn't. Maybe he was saying he wanted to go back to try to woo her because he missed her.
After this, the handyman leaves and tells Truman that he should really just get a teddy bear, just as the song Perfect Day plays.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home.
He mentions that Truman should get a teddy bear so he has something to hold on to at night. And I have a note here saying that this guy is just so sweet and too pure for Truman.
And the final shot is Truman and the Swans back in the good old days at the hat shop, just tossing their hats around and trying them on and having the best time you could ever imagine at a hat shop together.
And while this scene is playing, Truman is reading off what he has written so far from chapter 20 of Answered Prayers, the overall theme of which is friendship.
And that brings us to episode 7, called Beautiful Babe. We all knew this episode was coming, I think. Babe reflects on her life and her greatest treasures, Truman and the Swans, reel in the fallout of a tragedy.
If you guys are watching this show, I highly recommend you have some tissues handy for this part. Remy and I both teared up at two different parts. It is the best episode of the season, as most of the times, in my opinion, the penultimate episode, the one before the finale, usually is my favorite episode. Happened with Breaking Bad.
It happens with a lot of shows. It always seems like the one right before the finale is actually the best one. I don't know why that is. But anyway, the year is 1978. Babe is in bed and she wants banana bread.
She starts getting ready for the day and, to her dismay, notices that her hair starts to fall out.
And she immediately goes and speaks with her doctor because the type of chemo she is doing apparently isn't supposed to make your hair fall out. And during this meeting, Babe is given the news that she has about 6 months left to live.
She actually asked the doctor if he were in her position, would he keep fighting?
Babe tells her husband Bill, who is in shock and, of course, wants Babe to keep fighting and try new treatments, but Babe is tired of fighting.
She shares that she's going to be dead by Thanksgiving, which is about 6 months away, and lights up a cigarette, which he begs her to stop smoking and asks why she wants to kill herself.
She basically says that she smokes because of Bill. Bill stresses her out and pisses her off and has driven her to smoke in such a degree that it has gotten her to this point, which I think is putting a lot on Bill, but she's upset with him, and that is justifiably so.
She mentions that all she wants right now is quiet and solitude and to speak to her children. But Bill mentions that her eldest daughter won't even talk to her because Babe is cold and neglectful.
Babe also seems to be insinuating that she really regrets staying with Bill all these years.
She says some hateful things to Bill about how her kids don't speak to her because of Bill and because she chose him over her daughter. And despite this really tense scene and despite Bill's clear anger with Babe,
he says something along the lines of, it's crazy how you can make me mad at you after just telling me that you're dying. Something along those lines. It was more eloquently put.
But despite this, he says he's going to reach out to Babe's daughter to encourage her to speak to her.
Next, we are out to lunch with the Swans, as they do, and Lee is talking prenup about her new boo, who we don't know a lot about. Babe asks CeCe about Truman, because Babe still misses him. CeCe thinks Babe won't talk to Truman because of Lee and Slim, and Babe says the actual reason that they haven't talked to him is because they can never be seen talking with Truman again, or they will all look foolish to the public after such a big hubbub they've done.
She admits that this feud has gone on for so long, not out of anger, but out of pride.
and she is realizing just how little all of this matters in the end. And Babe says she wants to have a party, and everybody is really excited about this. And Babe says she's gonna make the guest list, but Joanne Carson won't be invited, of course, because she's been a little nutty since the divorce. That's what Babe says.
She's talking about the food she wants, how it's styled, and the swans are getting so excited. And they ask her, when is this going to happen? And Babe says, well, the summer, of course, after I die. This is her way of informing the swans about her prognosis. And she reveals that this party is not one she will be attending, as it will be her funeral. And this is something that is true. Babe planned her own funeral.
It seems like that would be something Babe Paley would do. She likes that sort of thing. Even in death, I think it would have brought her some joy leading up to her death, just planning this whole thing.
Babe comes home and hears Bill talking to her daughter Kate on the phone in the other room. This is not Kate Harrington. This is a different Kate. And Bill is trying to convince Kate to reconcile with her mom.
And this is the scene I was talking about earlier, where Bill is sympathetic and then you end up hating him all within the same sentence because he's begging his daughter to speak with his dying wife and her mother. But at the same time, he says to Kate that Babe was never built to be a mother. And Babe is also listening in on the other line during this whole conversation.
Kate calls her a sphinx and hangs up the phone. I do want to know, I don't think Kate is their shared daughter. I think it's Babe's daughter from a prior marriage.
Then Babe arrives home looking a bit rougher and older, in my opinion.
I could not figure out what this house was. Was it like her parents' house or something? At first, I thought it was like a hospice, but it's not because she says she's only there for the weekend. I have no idea what this house is. Maybe her childhood home because she seems to know everyone there. But there's a wheelchair. I don't know.
I would figure maybe a summer home, maybe a house in the Hamptons, something like that. A lot of New York rich socialite people have homes outside of the city where they can get a little bit more peace and quiet than New York City offers.
She's greeted by two people who ask if Bill is joining them for the weekend, and she says no, and she takes a little walk around the grounds while a man with a wheelchair falls idly behind her.
Yeah, Babe is getting weak and does need the help of a wheelchair at times these days. And next we have Babe writing her memoirs, reflecting on life and realizing that so many of the things that she's collected over the years are completely meaningless, but her world is filled with beauty.
She wakes up in bed to Truman in the room, reading from her diary with fireworks outside. It's clear that this is a dream.
I knew it immediately. You can tell because they both look younger. That was the first thing. And, you know, anytime there's a movie or a TV show where someone wakes up and things are just a little too perfect and someone's in the room that shouldn't be there and everything's great, you always know something's up.
Either way, Babe is ecstatic to see Truman. He presents her with a gorgeous pink dress that she bought in 1969 but never wore, some fake pearls that he bought her for Christmas because he couldn't afford real ones, and yet Babe loved them anyways because they were from Truman.
They forgive each other and they are just so happy to see each other, and I am tearing up at this point because I know this is just the last moments of Babe's metaphorical life, and I am tearing up because I know this is all just in Babe's head, and these are the last moments of her life.
Babe also shares that she has a secret, and that secret is that Truman is one of her top three, one of the ones who you collide with, and one of the people who reveal to yourself who you truly are, that you must always forgive them because they are so precious.
Truman then goes to turn off the bath, which has been running in the other room, and Babe follows him to reveal a swan is swimming around in the bathtub. And this is the point where Babe realizes that none of this is real and she is dying.
She asks if she is dead, and we see a quick flash to where Babe really is. She is laying in her house, surrounded by Bill and the three of her children, with very labored breathing.
This is the part that got me. Truman begins telling her of all the things that they can still do before she goes. They can still go see the fireworks. They can still talk about whatever she wants. They can stay for as long as she wants. And Chokes me up even just thinking about it, but she knows it is the end. But having those last moments, even though it is a dream, could have most likely never occurred in real life. It's just a beautiful thought of someone believing that their last moments are in this perfect world with their best friend and all is forgiven. And I don't know, it's just very beautiful.
Truman and Babe embrace just as Kate comes in to sit with her mom during her final moments. And with that, Babe is gone.
CZ wakes Truman up the next day to tell him the news about Babe, but Truman already knows. He just had an intuition, I guess. CZ begins to cry and they hug, and Truman says he needs to get to work and stumbles into the other room to get some coffee. And at first you're like, what the fuck, Truman? You're being an asshole right now? But Ashley, what is actually going on here?
Truman says he's been working on her eulogy, and he has to finish it. He has to be the one to read the eulogy because he was the one that was closest to her.
Unfortunately, CZ reveals to Truman that Bill will not allow Truman to attend Babe's funeral. And up until this point, Truman was pretty composed. He hadn't shed a tear. He seemed like he was just groggy from waking up. But this gets to Truman, just the thought of not being able to give this final send-off to his best friend.
At first, he seems kind of in denial about it. He says he's going to crash the funeral. CZ says Bill's going to have people lined up to escort him out in case he does so. And he just says he has to go because Babe wants him there and he needs to read the eulogy. And this is another moment where I just thought, like, I fucking love CZ.
Yeah, she stands by or sits nearby and lets Truman read his eulogy to her. And it's everything Truman wanted to say. I believe this eulogy would have been some sort of a closure for Truman, even if they never got the chance to say how much they meant to each other in life. This would have been his chance to do that. And because he can't go to the funeral, CZ allows him to do it for her. And she is a great friend and she is crying and it's a beautiful eulogy.
Both in the rest of the show and in real life, this seems to be the moment that truly broke Truman. It's not being allowed to go to Babe's funeral to say goodbye to his friend.
The only part that is still unfinished is the ending, so Truman asks CZ to leave so he can work on it. She leaves, and the next scene is Babe's funeral.
Which is being prepared exactly how Babe wanted it done. While the swans are at lunch, they glance over and see that the grieving widower, Bill, is being comforted by a swarm of younger women.
The swans also begin talking about what they will do without Babe. Babe was the glue that kept them all together, it seems. And it is this point where Slim is actually the one who says that Truman should have come. And the swans are a bit in disbelief that she's the one to say this. But yeah, it seems like this death really is putting a lot of that to rest for many of them.
And the comment about how Babe was the one that kept them all together is illustrated soon after when they're trying to think of lunch plans. None of the days seem to work for them and they just say, well, we'll figure it out. So that kind of, I think, illustrates how Babe really was the glue in this group.
Yeah, they're all going to drift off into their own lives and the swans are no more really after this.
Next, we have Truman giving another interview on the Stanley Siegel TV show, and he is wasted. He can barely speak. He is slurring his speech, and he can't even open his eyes. Because he's so drunk, Stanley Siegel is asking him about this. He's telling him he's an alcoholic and asks, why does he drink so much? Truman can barely provide a coherent answer about why he drinks, except for when Stanley Siegel asks him, well, what's going to happen if you don't stop drinking? To which Truman replies, well, eventually I'll kill myself without meaning to.
Truman wakes up in detox with Jack by his bedside. Unfortunately, during this, Truman had missed Babe's funeral, but he wasn't invited, so I don't know if it's really missing the funeral at that point.
Jack reveals that he found Truman laying in his own vomit, and he was just gonna leave him there. But the young man he is dating encouraged him to try to get Truman help one last time.
Yeah, Jack has met someone new and they are younger than him and he is in love. Jack says this is his goodbye to Truman. Truman pleads and says that he has no one except for Joanne. Because everyone seems to hate Joanne in this episode, she gets a lot of needless bashing throughout this series.
Well, he mentions that he only has Jack and Joanne, and Joanne isn't Jack, and Joanne isn't Babe. And he actually apologizes, which I think maybe other than Kate is the first time he apologizes for anything all season.
Truman is not big on apologies, and around here I got a little confused over what was maybe a dream, what was really happening. Things get a little weird at this point, because Truman wakes up in a room at Joanne's house. The person he was literally just saying he didn't want to be his only friend is his only friend. And the handyman is there, and Truman is now in a pool, he's drowning with Babe in a swan boat floating above him, not helping him, and Joanne saves him. She gets him out of the pool, and I am just wondering, is this real? What's going on here? But I believe it is explained a bit more in the final episode.
Truman is dazed and disoriented. Joanne lets him know that he came to see her to write on answered prayers, and that he almost drowned in the pool and she had to pull him out. And she is laying in bed with him and she is wet. She is soaking wet. And Truman, with a very soft tone, forces out, "If you really care about me, then fetch me a drink."
Joanne wants to call an ambulance for Truman, but Truman doesn't want that. And Joanne doesn't want to get him a drink. And so Truman just ends up saying a very sad, "Oh dear."
It's actually sad. She picks up the phone to call 911 and stops to think about it and puts it down as a single mascara tear drips down her face.
This is the point where Truman wakes up and Babe is there to greet him. What does that signify? But Truman is on his way out the door at this point. And when Truman and Babe first see each other, they are, of course, very delighted. And they make fun of Joanne immediately. Like, right away. They both shit on Joanne for no reason.
Yeah, they're like shitting on her house. He mentions that Joanne was going to get him a soda instead of the delicious looking Bloody Mary that Babe hands him.
And Babe also gives him a cigarette, but he coughs that one out. I guess he is not ready for a cigarette in this dream scenario.
And they start reminiscing on better days. And I just have a note here that throughout this whole episode, Tom Hollander as Truman just looks so sad. It's really heartbreaking.
Babe tells Truman that his liver and kidneys are shutting down as she strokes his face. And around this point, I begin to realize that Babe was sort of Truman's surrogate mother and best friend all along. They kind of looked out for one another and she took care of him in a way that his mother never did.
Similar to what Babe asked Truman, Truman asked Babe if he's dead. And she says that, well, he has been for a long time and that it's finally time for him to let go.
Babe forgives Truman and tells him to close his eyes, just as Truman thinks back on a trip to Jamaica him and Babe had together and closes his eyes.
Joanne calls Jack to let him know that it's over and that Truman is dead. Jack asks if he said anything, and here is when Joanne tells him his last words, which were his real last words. He said, "It's cold, mother, and beautiful babe." And that's the part that choked me up at the end. It was so sad.
And that brings us to our last episode, Phantasm Forgiveness, which I'm going to say up front is my least favorite episode of the entire series. It also has the lowest rating on IMDb.
I agree. I think they should have just ended it with the last episode.
I can understand what they were trying to do with this episode, but I wasn't crazy about the execution, in all honesty. Which is interesting because Gus Van Sant directed this finale episode, but the description for this episode is past, present, and future collide as Truman makes a final push towards finishing answered prayers.
We open up with the words 1984, the year of Truman Capote's death.
Truman is walking through a cemetery with flowers, and he arrives at Babe's grave. Truman takes a seat and begins talking to Babe like she's still there right next to him.
Not before knocking the flowers of choice that everyone else left, I may add.
Babe was extremely particular about her flowers, so Truman was insulted that a specific type of flower was left on her grave. Babe deserved better, in Truman's opinion.
I will say this scene and then the next one I did really enjoy. But as Truman is talking to Babe, he lets her know that he hasn't had a drink in 3 months and he feels great. He lays down next to her and tells her that, well, he may be joining her before too long.
He asks Babe about death a little bit as well. And yeah, Truman seems very ready to die at this point.
After leaving the cemetery, he stops by Jack's house with flowers and asks to come in, which it's clear Jack has company and does not want to invite Truman in.
But Jack's new boyfriend is a fan of Truman and invites him in and is actually really excited to meet Truman. I think that would be my reaction if you had an ex that was a famous writer or musician or just someone I respected and they just stopped by for something. I'd probably be like, oh, you can come in for a minute. I mean, you know, don't be offensive, but yeah, please.
He didn't invite him in for a minute. He's like, oh yeah, I'm making bolognese. Wanna have some dinner?
He is riveted by Truman, as everyone is. You know, Truman is a talker and knows how to talk.
At this dinner, Truman talks about answered prayers and reveals that the focus of it has shifted a bit. The rest of the book is going to be an apology and an explanation to all the people he hurt, most notably the swans.
But still fiction, he reiterates.
He's kind of doubling down. He's saying that the first part was fiction. So, of course, this is all going to be fiction, too. Which kind of shows that he's now really starting to realize and fully comprehend about why people were upset with him. And he is regretful of this. It was not worth the friendships that he lost.
Truman also says something here about the heart wants to forgive and be forgiven because it was something that he saw in the killers from In Cold Blood, who he had spent all those years with.
He calls them the boys on death row in Kansas. So it's clear that he's talking about Dick and Perry.
Little nod to Dick and Perry.
On the way out, Truman says he's happy for Jack and that he deserves to be loved, to which Jack says, you do too. And Truman says he doesn't want love, he just wants forgiveness.
So Truman gives Jack a big hug and then waves goodbye.
Truman is back in his apartment working on Answered Prayers, the story of which is now going to be acted out in scenes with all the swans. So it's kind of like the scenes that unfold, each swan has a storyline in it. And it's kind of his way of apologizing for what he wrote. And he is giving them all the happy endings he thinks they deserve. First up is Cece.
Yeah, and he's using aliases, as Truman did in real life, but we're just going to call them by their actual names. And yes, Cece is the first one to get this apology treatment.
Aliases he uses are the aliases that were in Answered Prayers, which the only thing I was kind of confused on is why Cece was even included here, because she wasn't in Answered Prayers, but I guess because it would have felt weird to, like, leave her out.
That was my thought. Truman apologizes to Cece, and my first thought was she even written about? Did he even say anything? Why would he apologize to Cece? They seemed like they were fine.
She was the only one of the swans, plus Joanne, plus Anne, that wasn't in the book.
At first, I thought she was upset that she had been excluded, and then, no, it seems like she was insinuating she was upset about what was written, but maybe she was upset that it tore the friend group apart, but I don't know, it seemed a little weird that Cece was included in this whole thing.
Well, in this little montage, Cece and Truman are driving in a convertible on their way to a dive bar in Mexico City, to where they show that nude painting that was painted of Cece, and they sell it to the bar for a very steep price.
Two whole whiskeys. Then they spend the rest of the day dancing and hooting and hollering and having a grand old time at that country western bar.
So, fun fact, this painting actually was hung for years in a bar in Mexico City until Cece Guest's future husband bought it.
Wow, okay. I wouldn't have expected that, too. So, a bit of truth in these little stories as well. I wouldn't have thought that. I thought all this was completely fiction.
Now, whenever we flash back to Truman writing the book in present tense, we are joined by another character, Jessica Lange, as his mother.
Yeah, his mom shows up and she says she just read his story and she says it's not good. And I would agree, I was not a fan of the last story.
She says it's stiff and amateur and that he needs something to loosen him up and forcibly shoves a drink in his hand.
She also tells him to write less fruity, which is, of course, an insult to Truman's sexuality, which his mother seemingly never approved of.
Next up, we got Slim.
And up until this point, I hadn't realized what the episodes were about, and this was the one that I was like, oh, okay, this is him apologizing to the swans, and they're reacting how they would have reacted for the most part. And he runs up to Slim walking down the street, and she just starts unloading on him. She's yelling at him, she's giving him all sorts of shit, she is pissed at Truman and letting him have it, and she is slapping him, hitting him, and he's just standing there and taking it until Slim gets tired and starts heading home, and Truman follows her home.
Inside, Slim reveals that she's moving to Santa Barbara, and he encourages her to get rid of her anger by throwing china against the wall, which they do together, and that seems to be what was needed to break the tension between them.
This must have been a fun scene to film, just them shattering stuff against the wall and letting loose. This probably was a good time.
I will say, I know Diane Lane is a great actress, but like her laughter and enjoyment in this seem genuine.
And who wouldn't be excited? This is fun, smashing stuff and being allowed to, and you're allowed to get it out. And I've actually heard there are places where people can go, and I can't remember what they're called, maybe anger rooms or something like that, where it is full of a bunch of breakable stuff, and you're given goggles and like a baseball bat or something, and people are allowed to rent and pay for these rooms and go in and just smash everything because it's a really good way of letting loose and it's a safe place to do that. You don't want to be just doing this in normal everyday scenarios.
I've never been to one of those places either, but one of my coworkers has and she said it was really fun.
Truman also tells Slim that he's going to throw a second black and white ball and Slim will be his special guest of honor. And the food will even be good this time.
The food is good, the party looks fun, and we end Slim's story with her meeting the love of her life.
Truman's mom likes Slim, and I think Slim and Truman's mom might have gotten along a bit. They have brassy personalities.
Yes, she pours Truman another drink, dispenses some pills, and said this chapter is much better than the last. To which we get, for the first and only time, a flashback to young Truman. I was putting his age at maybe 5.
He was very little in this, and he is at his childhood home, I believe, and his mother is in another room with the door shut, and she is with a man. Little Truman is looking through the peephole, watching, and his mother catches sight of him and goes out and begins lecturing Truman and basically telling him to scram, but Truman just wants to be with his mom.
Not only does she tell him to scram, she is so cruel to this young kid. She calls him a sideshow attraction and that how he carries himself is an embarrassment. And she doesn't even tell people that he's her son. She says he's the nephew. And she says, you gotta go over there because mama needs to find a man who can help you pay for those clothes you like so much.
She blames Truman for not being able to find a man who can financially support them. And yeah, poor little Truman is just sitting there taking it. His mom leaves, but tells Truman she will come back to dance with Truman later. I guess they would dance and play together. But I don't think she ever comes back. Truman spends all night waiting up for her.
clearly lots of time passes. We see Truman kind of laying all over these things, doing what I imagine little kids would do if they were left home. And this scene ends with him banging on the door, demanding to be let in. And this is a nod to memories he actually had as a child when his mom would leave him home alone in hotel rooms for hours upon hours upon hours while she was out with male suitors. And this is likely what helped develop his fear of abandonment.
Our next story is Lee.
She is married to Burt Ross, which I looked up is Herbert Ross. They were married from 1988 to 2001. He was a choreographer, an actor, and a producer.
She seems to be completely repulsed by this dude. She does not seem into this husband at all.
They mention, or Truman mentions, that he was like closeted, but he had several wives before. I was thinking maybe they were saying he was closeted. Maybe there was rumors of it because he was kind of a big person on Broadway. And even though Lee does seem disgusted with him, they were married from 1988 to 2001. He died like right after they got divorced. But anyways, Truman gives her her own memoir titled Lee. Explanation mark, which Lee starts reading and she loves it. Truman basically says this is the time for Lee to be the star of the story and to step out of her sister's shadow.
Truman also offers to kill her husband, and Lee is down. She hates this guy. Let's kill him.
This is my least favorite of the apology tour stories.
It seems really rushed. The others seem like they had a little bit more thought put into it. This is probably the shortest of all the stories, too.
And he was also kind of bashing her throughout the whole thing, saying how she never finished anything, she was always in the shadow, and blah, 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 blah. She kills her husband with poison tobacco. This is the one that I was thinking, this does not seem like an apology, which is wild because she is the only one of the swans whose real name was used in the book.
And not only do they kill him with tobacco poisoning, they apparently like melt the tobacco into some liquid form and drug him and inject the tobacco into the back of his neck. I had never heard of anything like this. This is a very weird way to kill somebody in a dream.
It's odd. And I think Truman's mom agrees because she is back to bashing his writing. She is pissed that this book is all about the swans and instead wants him to write about her suicide.
Because she says he remembers it. He was in his 20s when his mother committed suicide, which I didn't realize that he was that old when it happened.
It was in 1954.
We flash back to Truman's mother fighting with her husband, and adult Truman is sitting nearby watching the events unfold with Anne Woodward sitting right next to him.
They are kind of silent, watching the whole scene unfold. And through this, Nina demands that Truman write the story. And Truman, this is not something he wants to revisit.
During the flashback, Anne talks to Truman in anticipation of his mother's suicide. While she does so, Truman's mom takes a bunch of pills and realizes at this point why Truman had been so cruel to her and says it was because Anne reminded Truman of his mother.
At this point, Truman asks Anne if she would ever forgive him for what he was writing. And Anne says no, and neither will the others, kind of dashing his hopes of answered prayers being his road to redemption.
She says some things are unforgivable and says if he ever publishes answered prayers, especially then, no one will forgive him.
And we then have a brilliant scene where we flash back to the first clip of the whole series. Truman is standing by a lake looking at the swans.
I may be wrong here, but I believe the black swan was not there this time.
They showed like a really quick clip of it, but when they zoomed out, you couldn't see it. But I couldn't tell if you couldn't see it because it was away from the other swans and it was kind of like in a darker area, if it actually wasn't there. But they did show it.
It could have blended into the water. Yeah, I didn't take that into consideration.
He then gets a box from his trunk that has pages of answered prayers. He pours gasoline on it and at the last second says he can't light it on fire. He just can't.
Anne Woodward is standing by and encourages him to light answered prayers on fire. And after a bit more hesitation, Truman flicks his cigarette onto answered prayers and sets it ablaze.
We now flash forward to Joanne's. He's poolside before this whole drowning incident. Anne and Nina are sitting together. They seem to be the best of friends now. They are looking at him as he is being pulled from this pool and just laughing.
This was Truman's almost drowning from the previous episode. We're getting a little bit more of what actually occurred during that whole ordeal. But yeah, Anne and Truman's mom, two birds of a feather. They are sitting by laughing, enjoying watching Truman suffer.
We then have the same clips from the last episode of him dying and his last words and her call to Jack. I want to take this time to insert here that this is not true. He didn't die via drowning. If you can recall from the Capote episode, he woke up at about 7:30 in the morning. This scene is at night and was clearly not well. Joanne wanted to call 911 and he begged her not to, and she sat by his side and they spoke for 4-5 hours. And as he died around 12:30, that's when his speech started becoming more nonsensical.
Joanne was a good friend. I think Joanne got a lot of shit during this. She was never even a swan. I mean, poor Joanne. But she stayed by Truman's side throughout the whole thing. And Joanne calls Jack after Truman has passed away. And Jack asks about the book. But, of course, Answered Prayers was never finished. And most of the scraps of Answered Prayers that Joanne can find is just nonsense. Apparently, he kept writing about a dream that's as real as stubbing your toe.
Jack tells Joanne to go ahead and plan the memorial since he was with her anyways, but mentions that Truman would want to be cremated. So she says she'll take care of everything.
Joanne was the closest to him in the end. Then after this, we cut to 2016 at an auction, which I would imagine this is based on a real auction. It seems weird to include if it's not. But a bunch of Joanne Carson stuff is being auctioned off, including Truman Capote's ashes.
That are displayed in a very beautiful box.
I'm used to seeing ashes in an urn. Yeah, I was a little caught off guard by seeing this beautiful ornate box, which apparently contained his ashes.
The auctioneer reveals that this is in fact Truman's ashes and that this box sat at Joanne's bedside until she died in 2015.
In the crowd bidding on Truman's ashes is his protege, Kate, and she is with her husband or boyfriend or whomever. They are trying to buy Truman's ashes, but the ashes sell for $45,000 in the end, and Kate just didn't have that kind of money.
It was really sad watching her bid. She at one point looks over to her husband, like, "Can I keep going?" And he's like, "Yes." He knows that Kate loved Truman. He really helped launch her career. He was there for her when her dad wasn't. Really was a father figure, and she tried, and I think they tap out at like 15K.
Yeah, they go as far as they can, but $45,000 is a lot of money.
Well, fun fact, this is true. Half of the ashes, however, were mixed with Jack's when he died and scattered at their Long Island home. But Joanne did keep half of the ashes in this box by her bedside until she died, and it was auctioned for a little under $44,000.
So the auction ends, we pan out and see that the swans are in the back of the auction house, and they are commenting on the proceedings and how much they don't like modern fashion. Afterwards, they decide they should all head out to lunch together.
We then cut to black and learn that Slim died in 1990. She also died of lung cancer. CZ died in 2003. As I said, Joanne Carson in 2015 and Lee in 2019. and that the full manuscript for Answered Prayers was never found. Now, Random House did publish what they had gotten from Truman at that point, but it was an incomplete manuscript. So I think this is kind of hinting that maybe Truman did finish it, and maybe he did burn it.
What do you think? Do you think Truman had finished it and burned it, or what do you think? I'm more inclined to think that Truman just never finished it.
I don't think he ever finished it.
Yeah, I feel like this was just something he was too distracted with other vices in his life to complete.
And that wraps up our bonus episodes of Feud, Capote versus the Swans. Let us know what you thought about this format. I know it isn't necessarily true crime. Well, I won't say necessarily it's not, but it was just so tied in with two of the last episodes we did last season about Truman Capote that we just felt like we needed to cover it. And we had fun kind of in this more casual format.
This was a good time. Yeah, let us know if you enjoyed this as well. This could be something that we add to future seasons. I really liked the show. I recommend the show. We're not giving our usual verdict or anything because, as you said, this is not true crime. But we can safely say that Truman Capote is probably the father of true crime with In Cold Blood. He really kicked off this entire thing, and he led a very interesting life. And I'm really happy that we got a chance to dive a little bit deeper into it. There's even stuff I'm curious about his childhood. Like, I'm wondering if there's more. But I think that's enough Truman Capote for our podcast.
Next week, we will be back with our usual style show. And we will start our two-part season finale about Capone, kicking off with the Untouchables and wrapping up with Capone.
And if you are enjoying our podcast, please like, comment, subscribe, all of that jazz. We are on Instagram and TikTok and all of that stuff under Criminal Adaptations. And if you leave us a positive review, we will, of course, read it on the air. And if you are one of the true crime people that we speak about in our podcast and repost us, we will speak about that on the air as well.
Until next week, everyone.
Have a good one.